Honourable members, I want us to proceed to start with our meeting so that we can be able to deal with all the issues that are identified on the agenda. I'll just make a small appeal that we in future maybe try to sort of gather at 9:15 when our meeting is starting at 1:30. So that we can be able to then have tea and foods, and we are able to take 9:30 as our starting time. So it will help if we actually do that much earlier in future, so that we keep up to the given time. This will help us that if, you know, because most of the meetings are not predictable, sometimes we might think there's no match on the agenda. Once we engage with discussion, find that there's quite a lot of issues that we want to deal. We don't find ourselves putting unnecessary pressure in terms of a time we're able to have sufficient space to discuss. Welcome everyone in the meeting, and we will be commencing. I just want to indicate first thing on our agenda here. We've got two items, and the items are as follows. We are supposed to get the briefing by the Minister of Public Safety and Administration, as it's a norm that most briefings we get them through the Minister. So those briefings are on its progress on the implementation of the State Information Technology Agency turnaround strategy. And the second item is an update on the draft legislation to be tabled in Parliament during 2010-12 financial year. I've been looking around. I haven't seen anybody from the department. I understand the issue of the minister. I'll go through the apologies as well that are here before me. But you know, as I was asking who's leading the delegation, I can see it from the side of the sitter. And therefore, I'm not sure what does it mean if the department is still not here, or were they waiting for that item to be done, the second item, which won't make sense to me, because both these items, the department is supposed to be here. I don't know. We haven't received any apology, because my thinking was that if the deputy minister and the minister, as would understand that there have been some changes, are not around, at least there should have been a person at a level of a DG from the department who's here. And I'm not sure if there's any clarification from the side of the delegation that comes from CITA, from the department as well, that can we get an indication how did this work? Because I know that I communicated with most yesterday with the intention of them trying to shift the meeting. It's something that I'll just clear. Why did we proceed with the meeting? Is there any indication?
From a recollection, the only communication from our deputy acting chairperson was that there is a possibility that the acting DG of the department may be coming. So as we sit here, we don't have a firm confirmation.
Can I request Martin to check the department? What is actually happening? We are unsure what's happening. We appreciate that the CITA delegation is here, and we, unlike all other days, we really intend to at last have the turnaround strategy. And it's one thing that we're not going to compromise today, because it's a matter that had been defended over and over, and therefore it does not help. I must indicate it's very clumsy if the department can just sit her without any of them being here, and we really don't take it quite good as a committee. We don't work that way. In the light that they even communicated with me, I really don't understand why would they behave this way. Frankly, we're all at work. You know, once we take this time as members of parliament to sit and deal with issues that relate to public service as our oversight task, we definitely, we're not really engaged in some jokes or play or some, you know, it's not a friendship thing or anything. We actually don't take it kind of time, largely, especially when the CITA involves this disorganization. Firstly, today we are not going to compromise the input. But I must indicate that there had been an appeal and a request that we shift the meeting. And of course, why we insisted that it takes place, we all know that it's been deferred many a time. And if you look at our third term program, it's very tight. If we could have shifted this meeting, we wouldn't have space for it anymore, and it wouldn't have assisted Parliament. And also, Parliament has emphasized and insisted that despite the fact that there have been changes in government in terms of the ministers, ministers who are deployed in new positions will have to hit the ground running. Because that does not necessarily mean that then Parliament must sort of defer its business. We are still on course in terms of what we have planned to do. We are going to proceed with the plans of Parliament, and therefore government will have to adjust itself in terms of the needs of Parliament, because we all have complementary roles. Our role, we have a plan, and immediately we cancel those meetings means we'll have a lot of say. We don't want that. We are committed to our tasks as members of Parliament, and we insisted that we are going to proceed. So in other words, if the DG or anybody from the department who is here would know that we are actually intending to proceed as planned, you know, because they might want to defer other meetings and we don't work that way. And if this is an issue we're going to find from the department, surely it's going to create a problem. We're not going to be able to work well, you know, as members of Parliament together with the department. We think that we had too much problems at this point in time. I think all must come to a stop. In the meantime, while we are still dealing, we'll find out what is that. We're not going to wait. Can I then indicate that I haven't received any apology from the side of members. They are all here, except the standing apology from Honorable Bishopo. Okay. I do have another apology from, besides Honorable Bishopo's apology, I also have an apology from the Deputy Minister, Zorro. I have an idea that the minister is not in the country. The newly deployed minister probably is not in the country, but of course it was not formalized, and because there is no one from the department, I really don't want to speak on behalf of the department. It's not my task. Okay, and then I would need to acknowledge those that are present from CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, and we have Mr. Wilfred Mabena, who's the chair of the Board Subcommittee on Stakeholder Relations. We've got Peter Khame. Yeah, that's the chair of the Board for Subcommittee on Procurement. Those are board members. We've got Kuki Tulwa. Kuki is the chair of the board again for the subcommittee on adult and risk, audit and risk. Okay, and then we've got Skumbuzo Chaveni. Skumbuzo is the chief operation officer and is acting as CEO at this point in time. We have met the CEO last time at the BRRR. We've got Mrs. Nogoli Donojozi. And Mrs. Nogolita is the head of the Stakeholder Relations Management. There are names that are not here. Pardon? Do you want me to introduce, or you can introduce yourself? Yeah. And I'm sure most of you know you, because they've interacted quite a lot with Mrs. Abraham. Okay. Is there anybody who's not introduced here? Okay. All right. In the light of that, I'll just indicate quite quickly members that you know of the committee. I'm sure it's proper for me to also introduce Honorable Hill Lewis. There's Honorable Sanskrit Veik. There's Honorable Manana. There is, by the way, Honorable who? Okay, there's Honorable Nyakembe in defiance. And there's Honorable Williams. There's Honorable Malulege. And there is Honorable Mohali. Okay, I would like to really appreciate that we you are all here from Sita. I know that you are desperate to actually put this on board, and some of the things were beyond, you know, what you could handle. But safe to indicate that, yes, there was a matter that actually happened while you were here last time, which actually made us not to proceed. We did deal with the matter. I think it's now water under the bridge at this point in time, you know, because also there had been some changes and so on. We just were looking forward for a better relationship. The only worrying factor is that it seems as if the department is more disorganized, you know, or they're confused about these changes. Like, we don't know, because we're expecting that we also take up this task. No one said now, because the changes, we can then not do our task. We are just not happy about them being their absence, and we are going to proceed, and we expect that then they will come, because item number 2 still stands on the agenda. It will be still a problem if there's no one to do that. Okay, so having introduced ourselves and having noted what is on the agenda, we're going to proceed with the business of the day. But also, we just need to indicate that I'm sure when we were on the BRRR, we did indicate that one of the serious problems that we had with the department was the State Information Technology Agency. It's one of the very serious problems that the committee had, you know, ever since we started, you know, ever since our first strategic planning meeting, where we called institutions, the alignment of the objectives was just not understandable. And quite a lot happened, and we were just not so happy. We really want to believe that going forward, because state information technology is critical, we are looking for a good relationship also, but the good impact on government side, because surely if that does not happen, it compromises particularly this committee that has been tasked to do oversight. Yeah, you would know as CETA that you're not only saving what comes under Department of Public Safety and Administration, but it cuts across. And therefore, if even within the legislated laws, the policies, you know, the acts that we have, when other departments do not cooperate and indicate the weaknesses that are in CETA, we are disempowered as this committee to actually engage along that. You know, because we need to firstly remove the cloud that had been, you know, hanging around CETA in terms of issues that had been labeled against CETA. And therefore, only after it's removed, it's only then that we can even start asking other departments, why don't they utilize the service of CETA? As it was standing, you know, it was really difficult. We wouldn't even think of doing that, because ourselves as a committee had a problem. And therefore, we want to believe that moving forward, for the sake of this government, for the sake of delivering for people out there, we are all going to find our way, and we're going to make a better impact. Okay, in the light of that, there are some issues, possibly I should have raised them earlier on. When we had the BRRR process, there is one issue which we still believe that it wasn't answered sufficiently in terms of the irregular expenditure, and which we thought it has to be covered. We can as well request CETA, if you haven't prepared for that and if you didn't bring it, we can prepare you to submit that in writing if you are not ready. But it's one issue which was actually outstanding. We had what was said, and we're not convinced. We need it in writing to come. And possibly part of what is going to happen, we will talk about it. Honourable Manana, remind me that we talk about this matter later on as well, you know, because it has to be cleared so that you are all satisfied and on moving forward. At this point in time, welcome, and we are going to allow you an opportunity to take us through the presentation where you'll be talking about the turnaround strategy. Your hand is up, Honourable Hill William.
Thanks very much, Chair. I just wanted to say, before we start the final the formal program, could we ask that the chairperson write to the newly appointed minister on behalf of this committee to welcome him and congratulate him on his appointment on behalf of us?
Okay, thank you, Honorable Hill-Williams. We'll definitely do that. It was, yeah, it was also what we thought, and thanks for pronouncing it so that the whole committee's congratulations and the minister. Safe to say, the minister was a deputy minister in the past for public service and association, which therefore would mean that he understands the environment, and it's not going to be difficult for him to sail through. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. As already been introduced from our side, all I need to do maybe to start off with is to apologize for our acting chairperson of the Board of CETA, Ms. Phoebe Potgieter-Kobole, who could not be with us as she was to lead this delegation. Could not be with us because of other official engagements. And also the CEO, who is also on another mission, official mission, and an old, you know, appointment that has already been set. He is also out of town and is represented here by our Chief Operations Officer, Ms. Kumbuzo, who also is going to be assisting us in taking us through the presentation, as it were. By way of introduction, what I want to say is that we don't want to repeat what has already been, you know, said previously, but members would recall that the Board of CETA that is currently in office has just completed 1 year in office since inception, since last April and a few months. It also had to hit the ground running, as the board came in a time when there were a lot of challenges and the outcry from inside and outside of government. We needed to salvage and resuscitate, re-engineer, and redirect a CETA that we all know that there is a need for its existence. One of the things that we started doing was to have a retreat and to relook at the vision of CETA and the reasons why we think because CETA couldn't deliver on some of its mandates. In the Founding Act. And the turnaround strategy was therefore formulated as a result of that think tank. And there was a broad consultative process which included both intergovernmental institutions, stakeholders within and outside of CETA, as well as industry in general. All of that gave birth to a turnaround strategy as a result. We are very happy, therefore, that since the turnaround strategy, a lot of progress has been recorded. We are here to share with you some of the work that has already started happening in the re-engineering of the business of CETA. We intend running this presentation in a very interactive way, as there's a number of things that has happened in the last year since the turnaround strategy. And clearly, there will be inputs that are coming from the members. And after the presentation, we will also have an opportunity to interact more on question times. And I'm sure members do have questions that they would like to put to our delegation. I will call upon, therefore, at this stage, if you allow me, Honorable Chairperson, our Chief Operations Officer, Madam Kumbuzo, to lead us on this presentation. Kumbuzo.
Thank you. Through your Chairperson, as our board member has indicated, From the turnaround strategy, there were 7 outcomes that were adopted for the period 2010 to 2014. Those 7 outcomes, namely, are the ensuring that there is quality ICT service delivery to the public sector, proficient lead agency in the public sector ICT, and integrated public sector ICT supply chain management, competitive pricing and financial sustainability, and effective ICT regulator, and effective governance and monitoring, and being an employer of choice as an organization. In terms of the progress with the individual outcomes, allow me to start with the improvement in the quality of service for CETA. The main problem that our clients had complained about was our non-compliance to some SCM processes as defined by National Treasury. Before the turnaround strategy, let me just give you the challenges that faced us as an organization. The requirement was that before we publish a tender, there should be a business case that is signed and approved by the accounting authority. Those business cases were not being followed, were not there. Part of the requirement of the supply chain regulations of National Treasury was that there should be a rotation of members of evaluation committees or evaluation teams, and we were not doing that rotation. And it's a standard requirement that you must disclose interests of members of the evaluation committees and adjudication committee, and there was a challenge also in that space. In terms of the 2010-2011 target, we had ensured that last year all the business cases were signed by the designated authorities before the tenders were published. We had also made sure that there is rotation of members of evaluation teams, including the representation of acquiring departments, the departments that we were acquiring on their behalf in the bid evaluation committees as required, and also instituted compulsory disclosure of interest for all members before the process starts. In terms of our 2011-12 targets that we set ourselves to address some of the issues is that we have then developed a template so that we can have complete information, because when the business case is there, if you don't standardize the template, people will give you some information, some will not give you, so some information will be left out missing. So we developed a template that all departments must comply and utilize. The other thing that on the issue of the non-rotation of members, CETA was not following the SCM process, we were following a procurement process. And procurement and SCM, it's a bit of a different processes. So now we have adopted a fully fledged SCM environment, which institutes committees, your bid evaluation, your bid specifications, and your bid adjudication committees on the various categories. And we utilize subject matter experts and technical experts on the bid evaluations. Because remember, we are an IT company, therefore there are technical requirements that people should fulfill. So you can't just sit in a committee if you don't have the technical or subject matter expertise. We have also, in addition, defined internal controls and procedures to make sure that the disclosures of interest is adhered to. Maybe just to inform members, we also, to support our ministry, because Department of Public Service and Administration, they are required to ensure that members of the SMS, senior management staff of government, disclose their interest annually. We are developing a system to ensure that all members of the SMS staff disclose their interest. It's linked to CIPRO, it's linked to PESO. You just put your ID number and it comes in. A pilot, a demo of that system was done on the 23rd of September during the Africa Public Service Week celebration by the former minister. And that system we're also going to use ourselves as CETA to make sure that everybody discloses their interest. And you get then have a full disclosure. As it grows, it will link to eNetis to include the disclosure of vehicles and all those things that we have, just to make sure that all our bases are covered. And in terms of other things that we have been complaints that our clients or departments have been complaining about was the turnaround times of CETA in terms of supply chain management processes. Before the turnaround strategy was instituted, it was normal for a request for bid or what you call a tender to take more than 280 days more than two years to be processed, 280 working days for it to be completed. Last year, we targeted to finalize the tenders within 100 working days, which is just over 3 months. And for this year, we're targeting the 78 days from close of tender. And where we're sitting today with that, we're sitting at 119 days. But we sit at 119 days because of the backlog that we had from all the years. So we're trying to get rid of the backlog. In terms of our target, the backlog should be complete by end of this October month in terms of the tenders that are spending from the previous month. Also, we have what we call closed bids because we develop preferred lists, and there are bids that you do to restricted people. Before the turnaround was instituted, you could wait for 190 days thereabouts for the closed bids. Last year, we managed to do the closed bids at 145 days. This year, our target was to complete the closed bids for preferred lists at 100 days. We are currently completing those at 95 days, which is below our target. The other challenge that we had as an organization was the contract finalization. When a tender is awarded, the process it took to finalize a tender, it took another 2 years almost. Last year, we targeted 120 days, which we got to. This year, we targeted 60 days. We were, at the time of compiling this report, sitting at 83 days. The number has now reduced because this is the report that we sent to Parliament, to the Portfolio Committee in
September.
I think it was September. We are now sitting at 63 days as the latest for us to conclude. The other issue that our clients complained about was that when they sent us requests for proposals, when they say, we want this type of service, can you do it, or should we advise that it should be done either by you or by industry and initiate the process, the procurement process, if it has to be done by industry. Prior to the turnaround, it used to take 6 to 7 months for CETA to respond. Last year, 2010-11, it was taking 3 months. We are now working on a 14-day turnaround time. So when we receive a request within 14 days, we are able to advise the department to say, your scope is not sufficient, these are the things that are outstanding, but this we CETA can offer the service in-house, or we'll go out on a tender for you to get an industry partner to implement. And we had committed to the 14 days. At the time, we were at 25 days, but now as we speak, we are on the 14 days to the dot to all departments. We also had issues of guaranteeing the services, a service level, particular availability of your hosting and network. We had guaranteed 98% availability of the hosting and network, and that we have been doing religiously well as an organization. Availability of CETA hosting, network, and service management center infrastructure is at 99.9%. But the challenge that we had is that we had not defined the service availability levels for other services. Remember, we don't only do the network and hosting and service management. We do application support and so forth. What we are sitting now, we are defining the service levels for everyone across in application and maintenance. We've targeted to guarantee 80% availability of the applications. What it means is that we're saying all the applications that we have as an organization that we support government on, we'll make sure that they perform at 80% without failure. So we do preventative and other than corrective, so that you don't have to go out and resolve. So, but we are sitting at, we targeted at 80%, we're sitting at 89.72%, and we are defining the service levels across. The challenges, if you deal with them without a strategy or a structured way, you cannot cover them, you then become haphazard. So what we then did to define our way of handling services to our clients, we have developed what we call the CETA service strategy with performance metrics. And the performance metrics says, I'll use an example of a vehicle that everybody has. If you drive a Mercedes-Benz C-Class, when you buy it, they tell you that it gets serviced at a 10,000 interval. BMW, they service it at a 5,000 interval. And they'll tell you that at a 10,000 interval or a 15,000 interval when you bring it in. At the first 15,000, this is the type of service that they'll do. They'll do the oil check, da-da-da-da-da-da. At a 30,000, they'll do another one. 60,000 is a major service, it will do this. They'll tell you that at a 15,000 is a is 30 minutes or an hour service. At 30,000 is a 2-hour service. At a major service is a 4-hour service, and these are the metrics and the judge. So we have defined a service strategy that tells you exactly that. If this is a type of service, at this interval, this is the metric that you get, the performance metric that you get. We have also graded the various services, because I'm sure members of Parliament, Chairperson, have heard that sitter services are expensive. But it's an issue of how you package that. What sitter has been doing, a client wanted sitter to provide a tent as a car to move from point A to point B. But sitter will provide a Mercedes Benz. A Mercedes Benz is luxurious, but the client just wants transport because they want to move around town. So therefore, you were giving them a service at a high price when they needed a base service. So what we have done now, we have tiered the service. We have a service that is bronze, that is a base level service, a service that is silver, gold, and platinum. So that is defined through our service strategy to allow clients to decide whether they want a bronze service and want a silver service and a gold service. Obviously, there are services that you cannot, as an organization, we are required, because they are transversal, we cannot pitch them at bronze, we can't pitch them at gold. They have to be platinum across, because they are critical to government, and it's our responsibility to make sure that critical missions are attended to at the same standard. So there are services that we say everybody buys them at the same level, and because you can't compromise on those services. And that's what we find in our service strategy. We've also, honorable members, instituted mechanisms to make sure that we report continuously to the board around our contract management. Because part of the issues that we had as an organization was that when the contracts were due to expire, they were not renewed on time. So, and the board will only find out when there's a complaint to say this contract has been what we call evergreen. It continuously gets renewed without putting a replacement. So we make sure that we report to the board on those contracts, on how we're managing the contracts that are due to expire, contracts that we are renewed. But there are contracts that are transversal that are set between ourselves and DPSA. DPSA has to consult with the GTOC to also say to them, if this contract has to be renewed, it means the consultation process must start within 6 months before the expiry date to allow the new specifications to be developed and finalized and published and concluded, so that we don't have the evergreen contracts coming in. Honorable members, the other issue that we, as our outcome that we targeted, is the proficient lead agency of government. Proficient lead agency of government, it means that we must add value to government IT. How do we add value to government IT? We must make sure that we advise government on information systems, or what is known as applications and technology, that will best advance the goals of government of making sure service delivery is improved to our citizens. What has been a major challenge at CITA is that, and there are departments who have lodged open complaints. Department of Defense have complained that since their info plan was amalgamated or incorporated into CITA, the level of defense innovation in the defense space in terms of technology, it dropped. And the challenge was that CITA never had a dedicated function at a high level that focused on innovation or government solutions. So we have now, through the board, established a dedicated function that looks at government solutions. So our responsibility is to look at if government needs X, like the example I've given on the disclosure of interest. We look at if government needs SMS staff to disclose interest, and SMS staff through the manual process are not able to disclose interest, what is the solution that we can put in place to make sure that it becomes easy for government, for senior member staff to disclose their interest and to allow the ministry to report and to be able to track and to add value? Because it's not about disclosure of interest. It's also when the interests are disclosed, to make sure that you feed them back into a supply chain process and make sure that they are not people with conflict sitting in adjudicating tenders or taking decisions that they have vested interest on. And it's because we were able to do that because we've got a dedicated function now in an organization that looks at government solutions. And what is that? That should be government solutions or IT solutions for government. In addition, CITA has not been spending money in research or what we call innovation. In the last year, we spent only 15 million pence in innovation. And for an organization that services government, that is not enough. Now we have, the board has approved a larger spend or a larger budget for innovation and research to allow us to research solutions that will be able to assist government to pass through that. There's also, we know that though we are the IT agency of government, we know that we cannot have the full capacity as an organization to render all services to government. There is space for industry players to come in. Though we set the standards at which the industry players come in, we have commenced a partnership with industry on various mechanisms such as smart government solutions, inclusive of war rooms that the police require, smart cities for municipality and e-government, but also in a number of other things that we have partnered industry on. I'll talk to that later in my presentation. Thank you. On the e-government, government in 2002 adopted an e-government architecture and e-government strategy. We have to play a role as CETA in the e-government strategy of government. Maybe let me just generally say, what does this e-government mean? For us, e-government means is the ability to support or enable government to render services at various fronts. There's what we call for government to perform efficiently, which is government to government, which is known as G2G services on the e-government. We also have the responsibility to enable government to render services to citizens at their convenience, which we call government to citizen or G2C. But government does not only render services to citizens as individuals, but also render services to citizens as business. So we've got what's called a G2B, which is government to business services that we render. And that is just the broad scope. The study of the United Nations has shown that governments that have adopted connectivity and pushed through e-enablement of service delivery, those countries have developed more rapidly. Unfortunately, our ranking as South Africa has dropped in the international e-government ranking due to our not taking particular initiatives to move forward that. But we are now addressing those things on the e-government space. Let me talk briefly about the initiatives that we are driving for e-government on a government-to-government, and I'll talk to the initiatives on the government-to-citizen, which includes government-to-business. On the government-to-government initiatives, the integrated financial management system that we are developing for government together with GPSA and National Treasury, it's meant to make sure that government is efficient at the back end. It's an enterprise resource planning and management system for government, what is called an ERP of government. We are going to commence its rollout. We are talking to the presentation, to the details of the IFMS later in my presentation. So I'll take my honorable members through that. I've spoken about the e-disclosure, the system to assist with the disclosure of interest of members of the SMS staff, which the Minister of the Public Service and Administration did a test run for in September, as I've indicated. On a government to citizen or government to business, we have identified 10 key government services that can be made immediately available to citizens online. But that has to get the approval of Cabinet. We have started the submission through Cabinet on the prioritization. We have engaged certain departments who are affected so that if they agreed, we can move on. For instance, in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the Master's Office, they've got what they call the Child Maintenance Grant System for the defaulting fathers for maintenance. We're developing that. For the police, we're developing the firearms register system for members with the FIS. We are also developing a system with the Department of Education, the Joint Department for Education, on the metric notification and some of the content. There are a number of solutions that we are working on that space. But also together with Home Affairs, we are offering banks the ability, when you go to a bank now, they scan your ID, because remember the problem that our country faced of fraudulent IDs. And though they have now introduced new ID systems, some fraudulent IDs are still circulating. The only way you can be able to get them back is if you have a mechanism to track that. So when you get to maybe let me take honorable members into this example. When you lose your ID and you go to Home Affairs and they issue you a new ID, and later you have not lost it, you have just misplaced it, and you found the old ID, most South Africans continue to use the old ID. But that old ID is a fraudulent ID, because the only ID that you, a person can only have one ID, and it's the latest as issued by Home Affairs, because that's what's in your population register. But all of us, we have a tendency of keeping the two. The other one you keep in your other, for females, you keep in another handbag, the other one you keep in the car. So it becomes convenient. But we are actually using fraudulent IDs, because you're supposed to keep one ID. So what we have introduced with the banking industry, when you go to the bank, they have a, we have, they scan your ID, it goes back through us to the National Population Register so that we can verify that that is an authentic ID. In some instances, they will take it back. For women, when they are recently married and they think their surnames have not changed, but the marriage is registered before the ID comes back, they go to a bank and bank says, it's not you. Your surname is no longer in Chaveni, it's Zulu. And people do not, it's because of that system that we've introduced at the bank to make sure that we get the right ID of South Africa. Because the person needs to have a single identification. And it's part of our government to business relationship, and it assists us it assists government to combat fraud or identity fraud. I've said to honorable members, I'll talk to the IFMS project. The history around the IFMS project is that cabinet in 2005 approved that there should be a development of the integrated financial management system, which will be done by National Treasury, DPSA, and implemented by SICA. This system is supposed to be used by both provincial and national departments. And part of the objective of that was to make sure that you eliminate various systems that government departments were using, but also the non-compliance, because the system, bus and parcel, logis and so forth that they were using, they were not complying with the legislation, with the PFMA as required. And the cabinet said SITA must perform its role to be a prime system integrator, that it should be able to acquire and build a large system, but also we must use the development of the IFMS to demonstrate our capability to be a prime system integrator of government. Because you cannot have multiple systems, you must have a prime system integrator who integrates them. Because the objective is that we must end up with a single, government must have a single view of a citizen. So when they know me as Kumbuzo Nchaveni, they must know that I'm married to whoever, I'm a mother to whoever, I work wherever, and I contribute to whatever pension. Such that when my child goes and applies for a grant, if my mother uses that child, because people do that child grant, they should know that that child does not qualify because the mother already works as a COO. So if you can only do that if you are able to integrate government systems, and SITA is supposed to play that role. In terms of on our part, what are the benefits for SITA being a prime system integrator for government? Will improve the quality of service to the citizens, but through the department. Because if government is efficient, then the citizens will benefit from efficient services. But will also reduce the cost of IT for government. Government spends a lot of money on IT. Will reduce that cost, but also reduce the cost of operations of government, because if we are electronic, it becomes easier and quicker and much cheaper. We are also trying to eliminate the duplication of information systems, and thus reduce the wastages, because you find one department has X, the other one has Y, and they're not talking to each other, and you spend 5 hours trying to integrate or to copy information. I'll give you an example. Last year and early this year, with the rains that took our country, we've got Department of Culture with a GIS system. You've got Department of Roads and Transport with a GIS system, this geographic information system. You've got a Department of Agriculture with a GIS system. When the floods, the other one was supposed to monitor the rivers. The other one was monitoring the roads. The other one was monitoring the farms or the agricultural spaces. When the rain was happening, we did not have a single view. So that's why in some community government could not make a call fast enough to evacuate people and to advise farmers on certain things. In some instances, if you remember in the Northern Cape, the farmers were complaining to say the sluice gates were not opened fast enough to allow the water to pass through. But in other places where the sluice gates were opened, we opened the sluice gates without seeing the impact that we have on the roads and the farms downstream. But if you had a single view, a consolidated government geographic information system, you would be able to have the impact of the decision that you take at whatever level, and then you'll be able to take the right decision for government, and you plan better and you manage better. And it's part of our responsibilities that we have to do. the IFMS on its own has, in IT we say it has five modules. The product scope is known as four modules, but we have broken them in various components. The first component of the IFMS is the supply chain management module. The supply chain management module has catalog management, procurement management, inventory management, and asset management. In the supply chain module, except for the inventory management module, all the other three modules have been completed, and we have deployed the asset management modules in departments in Limpopo, also in the National Treasury. The procurement module, we are deploying it now in Limpopo, some departments, and also in National Treasury, and also in the Department of Defense. We are busy completing the development of the inventory module. We are at 70% of that module. In the HR management, management module, the components include health and safety management, education training, development, labor relations, HR planning, organization management, recruitment management, employee movement, performance management, HR reporting, career management, remuneration management, termination of services, and HR administration. That module is completed. It has been deployed at the Department of Public Service and Administration, and we are working on its deployment, because we call them lead sites, in the Department of Education in the Free State. On the financial management, which includes the MTF budget preparation, departmental financial management, treasury financial management, and payroll management, we have not yet commenced with the development of the financial management. It is due to be completed in September next year. The payroll management component of it, though, it has to be completed by June next year, 2012, because it's critical for the full functioning of the HR management, so that we can be able to do an end-to-end HR and payroll system from that space. We are also underway completing the business intelligence module, which is the reporting, analysis, dashboard, and data mining. We have some components of it, because for the other modules that have been completed, you can only function if you have some elements of business intelligence, because you have to do data mining across the modules. I have spoken about the status of the project, so I'll pass that as I was presenting the other part. I've similarly spoken about the implementation at the lead site. I'll then pass that. Part of our other strategic outcome is to be an ICT supply chain manager of government, an efficient ICT supply chain manager of government. I've spoken to our process to transform the organization from procurement to a fully functional supply chain management function. I've initially indicated, honorable members, that we will talk to the partnerships with industry that we have comments on. We have engaged with the original equipment manufacturers, known abbreviated as OEM, in the spaces of telecommunications, communications network equipment, desktop and peripheral devices. The desktop and peripheral devices is devices such as printers, scanners, and faxes, those things. The storage guys, people who do the data centers, and the software development. What is our objective of doing the partnership? Our objective is that we must contribute to the development of the local and indigenous IT industry. Why is it important that we contribute to the development of the local and indigenous IT industry? It's because countries that have developed recently, such as India, Brazil, and so forth, they've developed because their IT industries have been booming. And if we have to compete in an information age, it's because it must be our information technology and the industry must be very strong and competitive. So we have to contribute to that. So we have to engage with them with that in objective in mind. But we are also saying we need to improve the quality of service that government receives from the OEMs or from industry, because there's a tendency of developing products that do not suit government, and then government just becomes the consumer without a say of saying, I don't like this, can you direct it? I'll give an example with desktops. Government has 1.3 million civil servants, thereabouts. Let's assume that 60% of those people are using laptops or desktop computers of one form or the other, because the other component will be people who are on the streets and so forth. We have specific requirements, but we go and buy desktops that are not made to suit our requirements. For instance, the IFMS, the workspace that is designed on, it has a different configuration. So we must say we want this type of configuration. The screen should be this way, the resolution should be this way, and still pay not an a premium price, but a lower price because we are buying in mass. We have not set those standards. We have just become, we were a consumer. So what we are doing now is to say we are setting the standards of the products that South Africa receives or the South African government receives and consumes. But also the OEMs have a tendency of saying, if you check, anybody can sell computers or resell computers. There's no complication. But they tell you that, and that if you check, if you have to create jobs and employment, you can get young people who have graduated from FETs or from wherever, people are sitting out to establish companies to sell computers and to also do routine maintenance, because the maintenance will be menial things that you can do. But this company say, no, for you to be our reseller, you must pay 100,000 a year. You must go undergo these training courses that will cost you another 200,000 a year. They make it so inhibitive of new entrants when the job is so simple and so uncomplex, which anybody can do. And those are the things that we've been saying to them, you cannot continue to do that, and this is our requirement. And we have agreed on the time frames. But also to say we must commit them to certain things. We are saying part of the things that they must do is to contribute to the innovation. If you check, though government spends in total 143 billion per annum on ICT, information and communications technologies in the country, there's little innovation that is done here. It's only one company in terms of desktop. It's only Mesa that assemble their computers here. They are all done in India or in China or wherever. Why, if we're spending that much of money, I'm sure they can afford to contribute a certain portion to innovating or doing some work here in this, so that we can contribute to job creation. And that has been our drive with them. But also, we're saying we need to start to contribute to the ICT skills development. So an industry has a role to play. So the OEMs, as they come in, because they are not mostly South African, as they come in, they must contribute to the skills development. They must say how many graduates or undergraduates are they training, because we require the ICT skills in this country, but also how many public servants can they contribute towards their training so that they can have their ICT skills. But also, they've not been coming to the party, I've indicated the issue around developing small, medium enterprises and also BEE, and we've been seeking to commit them to that thing. And honorable members, we have been, part of our mandate was to make sure that we maximize or optimize economies of skills. So we have been committing them to say, if we're doing this bulk purchasing, these are the benefits that we must start seeing. The prices for IT goods and services for government must start to be cheaper. And we're saying, if you are confident that your solutions that you're developing are good enough, you must be willing to take a risk on them. So when you want the revenue from them, you must also take a risk. So we want to engage with them on a risk and revenue share model, and we started to implement them in some spaces. Honorable members, initially I referred to the SITA pricing and it being expensive, or it being perceived to be expensive, and the challenges that we had there. I'd referred to our service strategy and the grading of services. From there, we have also defined our what we call our pricing modules. Our pricing module is aimed at reducing the cost of services continuously and on a continuous basis. For instance, I'll give you an example. The cost of internet connectivity, the more you use bandwidth or the more people become connected, the price of connectivity must go down. So it means our pricing model is structured that government will not continue to pay up when they must pay down, and to force also industry to say where we're supposed to go down, we really go down at a real-time basis, not to say a year later or 2 years later, but go down immediately as the prices go down. We've also had a challenge as an organization that though we sought to do a number of things, we did not invest in the ICT infrastructure in the last 2 years. So our ability to maintain high level of services has been compromised by our non-investment in the ICT infrastructure. we have finalized our ICT strategy, infrastructure strategy, and the capital expenditure for the next 5 years. And that capital expenditure is being done through with partnership with industry as part of lowering the cost on that basis of the revenue and risk share model, because it will only be beneficial for government that way. We also, the other why we want to partner with industry on our infrastructure deployment is because it will encourage innovation on their part as they service the organization. Through you, Honorable Chairperson, the major issues that you've also heard from about CETA from our clients, there were complaints which were mostly derived from our stakeholder relationship management issues. They were saying we are non-responsive to their complaints and their queries and their requirements. I've spoken about how we service them, how we do them. But also at a relationship level, we have embarked on a process to improve those relations. We have finalized discussions with South African Police Services and the Department of Justice in particular on our relationship and how we engage and strategic direction. We have commenced on the same engagement with the Department of Defense and also Department of Education on say how do we strategically assist and provision with each other. With the Department of Police, we even report jointly to their portfolio committee. So when they are called to account in the portfolio committee of the police, CETA also goes and account on the IT spend of the police and the IT strategic projects of the police. It just shows you the strength of the relationship that we have now solidified. We have also embarked on provincial visits across the country. Since this submission was made to you, we have also gone to Mpumalanga to, and we have finalized a service delivery agreement with the Department of with the provincial government of the Western Cape and also the provincial government of Limpopo, and we're in the process of finalizing one with the KwaZulu-Natal government. Our relationship with GTOC has drastically improved. We are cooperating with the CIOs of government so that they can input on the direction and we can advise them on the direction that they must take and how we should support them as an organization. Honorable members were invited to the GovTech. We have repositioned it to be an engagement forum where we can advance a government IT agenda instead of it being a marketing pitch for service providers to come and demonstrate their products. Now we are starting to say how does it serve government better in terms of products and so forth. And we have instituted a mechanism for to get feedback from our stakeholders, not only on our annual stakeholder satisfaction survey, but continuously on a quarterly basis we get feedback to say, are we improving, are we not improving? And when it's serious, we get monthly feedback so that we can intervene and correct those issues. In terms of provinces, the major issues that provinces have complained about was that we were not able to service provinces in terms of our investment in the local economic development and also the SMMEs because the procurement has been centralized. We have completed our distribution model and we are restructuring how the province functions. We have decentralized services that are required to be at provinces. Why we have decentralized those services is because we want to contribute to the local economies of the various provinces. We have to develop the ICT skills in the various provinces. We must create jobs in the rural provinces through IT. And also, fundamentally, we want to improve the response times that we give to our provinces, and we also want to position CETA to be able to render services to municipalities as our next step, because wastages in government IT is mostly taking place now at municipalities. So we must start to assist government to cap that wastages of IT resources in municipalities. But it's also in line with the commitment which I'm sure honorable members are working on around the single public service. So if we are going to end up at a single public service at one point, we shouldn't be ready and have capacity to service a public service as a whole in its totality without the tipping issues that they would experience from our incapacity or poor planning. In terms of institutional reform for the organization, in the last few years, CETA has never had a permanent executive. Everybody was acting. We have already filled 8 out of the 9 executive positions. It's only one position that has not been filled as we speak to you, and we are in the process of filling it. We have also we're in the process of finalizing our organizational redesign so that we can have the capability, including the things that I've spoken about around provinces, to deliver on our strategies. And we are in the process of finalizing the placement of staff. The engagement with staff has already commenced. The overhauling of our HR policies is underway. It's a work in progress. As you develop certain capacity, you need to put sufficient HR policies in place. But the basic HR policies are now in place to govern our organization. And this is part of our commitment of being an employer of choice, because for us to be able to render services at the high standards that we are committing to yourself, honorable members, we need our employees to be satisfied and be happy with an organization. So they must prefer to work for us or for the organization so that they can deliver. In terms of governance, we have achieved a clean audit, and not a clean audit, an unqualified audit without serious matters, though the AG has raised an issue of non-compliance with laws and regulations as it relates to procurement on behalf of government. It's those things that I've referred to earlier as that we are addressing when it relates to supply chain management, which we've already put mechanisms to make sure that it doesn't happen again. I've spoken earlier about our implementation of an SCM policies and the procedures to eliminate the concerns that the AG raised on the procurement on behalf of other departments. And in terms of the key challenge with the first year of the turnaround, we have had, like you mentioned earlier, Chairperson, as you opened, that the issue of an increase in the irregular expenditure. The increase in the irregular expenditure is due to the process of cleaning up on existing contracts, because the existing contracts were not done properly. As you clean them up, you find irregular expenditures, which you must disclose. And even next year, we anticipate that it will go higher because of the cleanup of all the contracts that we had. It won't be because of new things that we're starting, but it will be as part of the cleanup of the old, so those irregular expenditure will arise. If honorable members recall, the requirement is that as you discover an irregular expenditure, irrespective of the year that it took place, you must disclose it. And that is the issue why the irregular expenditures have arisen. It's not something that is coming from now. And also because the other things that was the issue around the legislative and regulatory compliance and reports that were not done were now cleaned up. And on behalf of the board members, that will be all.
Okay, thank you, Senator. I'm sure members of my delegation, Chairperson, may want to input onto the presentation by highlighting or fleshing out some of the key areas of the record of achievements that was tabled, presented here by our CEO. From my side, what I would want to say, maybe by way of emphasizing some of those areas, is that it is commendable, Chairperson, the amount of work that the new leadership of CETA, by way of the board and the oversight that it provides since it started, and the executive that has come on now since it started, it is achieving as much in a very short space a time, more than the four boards, I would say, in leadership that came before, and we do understand the problem why. One of the things that has been said here by the minister is that there's been a high turnover of leadership with about 14 CEOs in 10 years. Now, in any environment, that cannot be any recipe for any stable enterprise anyway. And as a result, this has really opened this institution to a lot of abuse, and the mandate of which has really been frozen to stagnation. The leadership that has come in has therefore really demonstrated a tremendous amount of determination and will, power and ability to taking this country and this government's security seriously
and taking it forward into the future. One of the things is that most of the people and departments that departed CETA and preferred to use private sector services and products on their own without coming through CETA was as a result of that frustration, of the lack of those quick turnaround, as well as the ability to procure and deliver services qualitatively and in good time. The COO has touched on a lot of things in terms of how we have improved the quality of our services. And then I must say that, we commonly referred to what service delivery, means is that there has to be qualification, and therefore you have to have skilled people that are leading processes and business units that can deliver. In terms of the turnaround and the redeployment of people internal to our systems, we have been able to ensure that we really re-engineer the system to one that is able to deliver effectively. And therefore, we think now we have really revamped CETA to have that qualification and as well as the ability to deliver. And therefore, service delivery, it's happening currently as we speak. The issue of the channel through which we supply our products and services has been a lengthy and frustrating one, and that's another reason why a lot of departments have moved away. Through the engagement models with the industry that the CEO again spoke about, we have begun to narrow that gap. In other words, when you look at the manner in which mostly people would define issues of the supply chain management, if you are inward looking, you are going to want to find reasons of wanting to do everything within yourself and finding ways in which you can reduce costs, and because you have to be seen to be lowering and passing that value on to government. And who runs away or escapes with that kind of situation and benefits more is the industry. So our new approach with the new leadership has said, let's engage in this partnership model, because what we seek to do, the supply chain management cannot start with us. It has to start with the source where this equipment is being manufactured. Let us start defining and understanding what it takes for them to manufacture and to offer these services that they are offering us at what cost, so that we become a partner that has a say in the price that finally finds that product into a Department of State. Only when you do that will you be able to then pass on that value and save government money. And with that, we are beginning to see a lot of progress, and we're beginning to exercise one very key point in the mandate of CETA, that of being cost-effective in the service delivery. Further on, the issue that was stated in terms of the stakeholders, we have engaged a great deal with industry, other departments, not only nationally, provincially, but as well as local government. And we are beginning to see a lot of benefit that comes with the revitalization of those kind of relations. The GovTech conference that we've just had in September has become a very important platform in terms of the think tank to determine the future of this government going forward in terms of the ICT provision. And this is why, instead of going in and out every year, we now have devised and formulated a three-year kind of approach, and therefore a vision, a lengthier vision of where do we want to take this country. And this GovTech has become the only annual stage and platform where we're able to engage with stakeholders, both within and outside of government, but as well as benchmarking internationally. This, I wanted to emphasize as areas that members can note as really adding to a great deal of the progress that we are bringing here in reporting back to this committee. And maybe at this stage, I want to thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and welcome questions from members. Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation. Honorable members, interaction with the presentation, any issues you want to raise, starting with Honorable William.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say that this sounds very good. I've been in this committee since we started this term, and talking about the improvements within the CETA that are currently taking place is very positive and quite, I'm quite impressed. But I just want to talk mainly to Outcome 5 of the Turnaround Strategy, which is an effective ITC regulator. And I need you to explain to me, how are you going to link that with your supply slide 14, it says, develop a local and indigenous IT industry. And you talked about how easy it was to service computers if you get them, et cetera, and I think that we need to caution these to be, you know, we need to be cautious about this. We must set standards of what exactly is needed in the servicing and creating these small businesses. We can't have inexperienced or unqualified people servicing entire departments, because we could end up with a situation later on where unqualified people, you know, can't get the job done, and then, of course, it'll come back to you again. And I just want to know more about how exactly you want to become an effective ITC regulator for the entire industry. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable William. Honorable Van Stokvig, you'll be followed by Honorable Mohan.
Thank you, Chair. I concur with Honorable Williams. The progress seems to be very promising. We also engaged with CETA at the BRRR workshop, and we've spoken about that there as well. Good luck. Maybe next time this year we'll have a very positive report. Just two questions. The COO mentioned the two IDs, people having two IDs, but they are only allowed to have one. In May, during the elections, local government elections, I had a few complaints in my constituency where political parties said that voters have two IDs, and then they voted in two different wards. I just want to know, is that possible, or is it just complaints? Is it possible, or is it just complaints? And then another thing, Chairperson, last year I had the privilege of attending the GovTech conference in Durban. Did we get an invitation this year? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Franz Kalkweg. Honorable Mohali.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also add my voice to those people who are saying at least we are seeing an improvement at CETA, even though we still want to see more. My question will be around the financial disclosure system that they are coming up with. Up to now, are there any departments which have shown an interest in acquiring that system? And my other question would be, Chairperson, in our last meeting or during the BRRR workshop, we talked about, I remember you commented around our entities operating in silos in the department, because I've heard the COO talking about research and innovation, and we have CPSI, which is about innovation, and all of them in the ICT. CPSI is doing something. They've got
very interesting innovations, and I don't know if the CETA is aware of what is happening at CTI. What is their relationship? Because they also talk innovation. My other question would be the ICT skills development. I would like to partner it with when they talk about e-government. Eventually we'll have an e-government, but there are people in the rural areas and the ICT knowledge there. How is CETA going to assist maybe with the ICT knowledge in the rural areas? Because almost all the schools, even though some do not have, people just donate computers. Even if it's computers, it's not really that, and will donate computers, they'll sit in some office somewhere, and no one would be using that computer. To say, how is CETA going to assist if we move into the e-government, because we will leave some other people behind? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Mahali. Honorable Manana, you'll be followed by Honorable Malulek.
No, thank you very much, Chair. nothing much really, but just to commend the executive, the board of CETA, on the good work that they are doing. Really, there is progress that we are seeing here. I'm very new in this committee, but from what I hear CETA was in the previous years, it's clear that by 2014, if this is the attitude and approach, they would have achieved indeed all the 7 outcomes of the turnaround strategy. Keep up the good work. You have the support of the committee, I would imagine. But indeed, and for as long as there is that attitude of positiveness at the level of the board, of the executive, to achieve this outcome, I think it is possible. Thank you very much, and yeah, that would be my submission, Chair.
Thanks,
Honorable
Mohan.
Thank you, thank you, Chair. Most of the time when we hear the word supply chain management, it partner with anti-corruption strategy. I didn't hear anywhere talking about your strategy in anti-corruption. And I want to know, how are you going to address the issues of staff doing business maybe with CETA? Do you have the strategy to clean up the corruption in the department? Thank you, Chair.
Maybe hold on a bit so that we just finalize, so we don't have to come back. You will actually come back with the response. If you kindly switch off so that it becomes quite audible, this one. Thanks, Honourable Members, for the questions, and I'm sure Members has already indicated that part of what they are getting as a feedback is progress, something that we always look forward to, and therefore I also want to echo that note that it's no longer the situation which was there when we started with CETA. It's no longer that, a situation where it would just create this even kind of anger from the members, because sometimes CETA wouldn't even tell you the truth when they came here. We therefore appreciate the progress. And of course, well, because we now interacted with you in the BRRR, we do get a sense somewhere you're not a little bit consistent, but those are not major things as well. The major issue is that there is significant progress that is actually coming away. Issues where it's a little bit unclear, those are the things that you're going to clear with yourself in terms of just finding out the finer details of those matters. I just thought maybe before you respond, let me also put on board issues that I actually wanted to ask, but they relate largely to what the members have just asked. For an example, the issue of the research, the research areas. I'm sure that might be another huge area that you are developing, which is quite good. Once you're in the IT industry, you need to keep up with the development, and therefore the research becomes also another critical aspect. And research is not cheap. That's the other issue. It's quite expensive. But also, one would really like to know, you know, even if you don't have the, you cannot respond now, but just to get your intention in terms of your research base, what areas would you like to sort of maneuver into, what kind of issues in terms of the thinking that is already there in SICA, what are the issues that you think you want to really do that work in terms of researching and putting forward. But also, you know, I wouldn't like to see us delinking this issue from the major activities or the outcome that the government has committed itself, because the link to our task is to see if from time to time your outcome, particularly including the department's outcome, is always linked on all the work that you're doing. And we do have the issue of job creation while we're still talking about that issue of research. We have the issue of job creation, which we also want to indicate that when we do that research, what kind of jobs can we create for the, particularly the young graduates who had been dealing with this. And, you know, I want you to understand the background of where do I come from when I ask this question. We did have the department presenting their human resource development and management strategy, which we weren't like, we're still going to interrogate it more, because we believe it's a piece of what can be implemented within the public service. As much as that strategy was not complete, the day we had a presentation of that strategy, we also had the Department of Education having an overarching strategy for the country. We are interested, as members of parliament, to see a link, you know, what the country is planning to do, what the public service and administration has to actually bring on board, and what would be the link in terms of the overall. And therefore, while we're discussing about this, it is to our interest to actually see how even the IT of government fits within this overall strategy. And therefore, it will be interesting for us, while we talk about the issues of job creation, you talk about fitting the young graduates, which was also presented from the side. You know, the higher education and training minister raised the issue that sometimes businesses, it's hostile in terms of taking up young people for the jobs. And therefore, we need to also, while we're driving all these things, come up with strategies of making them link to what we are doing. We are giving them business, we're working with them. You talked about linking the industry players, partnering with them. They therefore have also to buy into our objectives as government. And therefore, there's no job that we just do for the fun of doing it. We want all our work to be linked to the overall class of what we're actually trying to do. We want the industry players to also understand our overall objective, and from time to time when we develop and grow these areas, how then do we actually bring those issues close together rather than this one or that one. And therefore, maybe the time when you might be discussing, you might be having some answers possibly, but because you are growing and you have been closing up gaps and you are actually developing now SICA in a way that will be satisfying, those are some of the things that you'd like to look in details in terms of how then to deal with it. We will be interested to see that, okay, this is how we're going to absorb the young graduates, and this is how we're going to impact on the HR strategy, HRD and HRM strategy of particularly the public service. You know, because that's where we have much more interest. Public service is not really doing so well in terms of that area, and we therefore want to encourage that from our side. Then the other issue, it's also the one that we did raise the last time, and Honourable Mahali talked to that matter as well, is the CPSI in terms of dealing with innovation, being within public service and administration, which we definitely, as the committee, want to encourage you to have a link. We actually emphasize this because we did do an oversight visit, and we're very sure the product that CPSI is using has no link to ourselves as well, has no link or any, there's nothing that talks to, you know, a SICA
when we were there. They told us who brought the products and so on. They're doing a good job, we're happy, but the link is just not there. And therefore, we want to emphasize that interaction. We talk lightly about the collaboration of institutions as a buzzword for this committee, and we cannot just sing it while even internally it's not happening. We raised it in the BRRR, we're raising it again. We do want to. We're emphasizing that innovation, that research. It must be the clear link from our side. We must immediately see how you work together. And therefore, we're putting that matter again forward. I think the issue of ICT literacy, I may understand maybe from your side you want to deliver technology, you want to assist government to deliver on this area and so on, and so you might have some objectives. But we would also say, in the light that there is Palama, which is one of the institutions that are located under Public Service and Administration, we can sort of come up with programs of the rural impact in terms of some programs. You know, those are the linkages, those are the collaborations that one talks about, where, you know, we know in the rural areas, you know, how difficult it is for them to link up with ICT and so on. And therefore, it will be to our interest to see that kind of a link, where also, while Palama is delivering some aspects of the services, they link to the people. By the way, in terms of the outcome 12, there is an issue of people participation, which should be an obligation from the side of the delivery that has to take place. And therefore, it will be important within some programs where you package something that can also alert people. They know how government works, they know how to source services, they can access maybe the ICT services of government as well. Part of that program will make us very happy one day when you come and say we work with Parliament in terms of teaching people ABC on technology. This is what we have packaged, particularly the rural people, and also linked to the overall thrust of delivering outcome 12. That will be quite satisfactory. We'll be very happy about that. There was something else in relation with particularly Palama and yourself, but nonetheless, it's okay so long as you can be able to work on something. Yeah, on the space for industry, which is the last issue I need to raise, which one would understand, ICT, there's no way that you can just close yourself up and say we don't want to, we want to deliver on our own. You will have to, you know, sometimes you will source out some services from other competent ICT people or companies. We would only be concerned about the safety, like we raised it in the past, the safety of the people that you are working with. Are they vetted? Do they understand the objectives? How do you screen them? How do you bring them on board? That is very critical, because we believe that they deal with very sensitive information as well of government. We would like to get that kind of comfort in terms of understanding that anybody that you bring on board, how best do you actually ensure that those people understand and work within your objectives, and they just follow the line as actually outlined, where they don't bring some elements that might bring loopholes to the government itself. And therefore, to us, that will be quite critical, and we'll be happy to actually get assurance along that area. I think those are just a matter that we wanted to raise. Can we leave it to Sita to then respond?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm going to request my colleagues to help with some of the questions. I will respond with respect to the ICT regulator role, which we are expected to play, and perhaps ask our COO to then respond to the two IDs issue. I'll also clarify GovTech, which invitation I think we did forward to the committee. I'll explain further. And also request Kumbuzo to deal with the IFMS and the reaction by, you know, other departments and whether they will acquire that system. The issue of innovation and the CPS, I will ask Mr. Peter Khame to deal with. And we will respond again to the issue of rural areas, ICT, and job creation. And I guess the issue of job creation potential of an ICT industry touches on the young graduates who are unemployed and what is therefore the plan that we have or the potential of the sector to absorb, by and large, the unemployed people or youth in particular. My colleague Kuki Mdlula will deal with the issues of how CETA is managing to deal with the issues of corruption. Kuki Mdlula is the chairperson of Audit and Risk Committee of the Board of CETA. The issue of corruption has been a very burning issue in our turnaround processes. Kuki will deal with that. If I may just start, Chairperson. As you would know, the act that founded CETA has, amongst other points in terms of its mandate, that we will also become the regulator. And that refers really to issues where CETA has to develop framework and standards that must address issues of certification. And that we, as a country, are then not used as a dumping ground by those nations that are producing en masse products and services of ICT for governments and for enterprises to dump them on our shores here and find that we absorb everything and we don't have the safeguards, you know, to ensure that we therefore are not found, you know, absorbing everything and risking the safety, therefore, of our citizens and the integrity of our state. That role has actually been a role that we as the board came in and we saw a problem in the process of consulting with, by and large, our stakeholders, and in particular GTOC. A concern was raised that it would seem that CETA is playing a, you know, player in a referee role when becoming a regulator. And therefore, if we discharge on that responsibility amongst others, we would be conflicted in the long run. But because of the absence of any such a body that regulates in the country, and for the fact that the act that founded CETA does make provision that we should, amongst other things, ensure that there's order in the sector, we regulate, we have had to then put some framework and mechanisms. The COO refers to it as incubation, that we needed to incubate the process of starting to put together policies and processes towards becoming that effective a regulator. In time, we do know that it may have to be an agency on its own that sits outside of CETA. It is our intention, therefore, Chairperson, that we give it the independence that it should actually have and that type of character, so that it services not only CETA, but also industry, government, and the private sector in general. Kumbu?
Thank you, sir. Maybe just to add on the issue of the regulator. We have set the standards for interoperability, is known as MIUS, Minimum Interoperability Standards, to make sure that all the systems, products, whatever that are developed, they are interoperable. We've also setting now, we're finalizing the security standards in consultation with State Security Agency. In terms of information systems security standards, we must set them together with State Security Agency. Currently, what's operating is the Minimum Information Security Standard, which is known as the MIS. It's outdated, and we are working with former COMSEC, now State Security Agency, to revamp that, so that all products and solutions that are in the country, at least in terms of security level, they are fine. We are also developing the integration standards. We have developed the integration standards to make sure that the products that we bring, they allow us for integration or to integrate with other components. we are doing also the testing standards to make sure that we have the, when we say we test a product or a service, we have the criteria of which they are tested and the issues of poor products, as Mr. Mabena referred to, does not arise. And also the maintenance standards to say if this is a product that we use, these are the, how we maintain them, and this everybody can do. It will address the issue that the Honorable Member raised of saying, if you bring Harry, Jim, Jack, and Peter in, how are you going to make sure that they maintain them at the right level? We have the standards for maintenance which they must meet continuously. But part of our SMME development strategy talks about incubation of SMMEs. So when Kombozo PTY or Kombozo CC arises, and they want to play in that space, and it's their first time they play, they're not going to be unleashed in an environment on their own. They will be a platinum partner. Remember I spoke about the various grades, and there's also various partners. There will be a platinum partner who is incubating them, because we are saying industry also has a responsibility to grow the small players that are coming into play. So the OEMs and the big players in the industry will incubate to make sure that they meet on those standards and they optimize. There was an interesting question about two IDs. There's a technical answer and there's a simple answer. A simple answer is that a person can hold two IDs. A technical answer is that of the two IDs, it's only one ID that is valid. So even if you go wherever, that other ID, that's the system that we're using in the bank, it rejects it. So it says this is a fraudulent ID. So we can only, the only ID that is valid is the ID that the Home Affairs has as their latest from the National Population Register. Remember, they are barcoded. So I can carry two identity books, including books, but it's only one of them that is valid. Or I can carry 10. Yeah. Of those three, Honorable Manana, it's only one that is valid. So that's what I'm saying. There's a technical answer and there's the on-your-face answer.
So they pick it up.
Yes, they pick it up. The scanners, what we've done, at least with the elections, I can assure you, we were working with the IEC on that, on the back. So when they go and scan, they'll tell you that this ID is fraudulent. Ordinarily, by law, it's just that sometimes people are scared. At the bank, if you give them a fraudulent ID, they even confiscate it. They're equally required to call the police. The issue that you'll see that the face is the correct face. It's just the issue of you don't want to overburden the policing system when people are just not knowing. Maybe we must encourage Home Affairs to communicate the issue of the only one valid ID, because it's not our responsibility. We can only put systems in place to assist Home Affairs to retract the correct IDs. In terms of the e-disclosure system, the system to disclose interest of members of staff, we are developing that on behalf of the Department of Public Service and Administration, who is the custodian of the disclosure of interest of members of the SMS staff. So what they will do, they will pass a regulation or a instruction note or whatever to make sure every department complies. So that system is going to be available for government as a whole. Maybe whilst I'm on the matter, how we are dealing with corruption in CETA is the same system that we're going to use. As you disclose, it will be able to trace you and we give feedback. It's also linked to the IFMS. Part of the component of the HR module, what we call HR administration. Remember when I was taking you through that component is embedded in there. So immediately you disclose, it reflects on your HR profile, on the HR module that we do. But in addition to the how we're dealing with corruption, on our part as CETA, the tender process commences, and the evaluation is underway. Our internal audit goes and audits the process. We have procedures that have been agreed upon, and the agents confirm that those procedures are sufficient to detect any issues of corruption on our part, in addition to the disclosures and all these other things that we do. But we have procedures that we follow, which the internal audit audits whether everything is in place. And when we put a report to the adjudication committee, either it's a board adjudication committee or an executive adjudication committee, on the full board itself, they are satisfied that those procedures were followed and there is an internal audit report that deals with that. Remember, the internal auditors work closely with the auditor general to deal with some of those issues. Thank you. The question around the CPSI, the Center for Productivity Innovation. Yeah. I always call them CPIX, so they said I mustn't call them anything. We are working with them closely. It's just that what the scope that they follow is it's a wider scope than our scope. I think the question by the Honorable Chairperson on what do we follow. On us, we innovate on the solutions that government require. For instance, when this disclosure of interest was an issue, we have to say, how do we deal with that? Because the CPSI looks at the products that individuals are developing for the public service. If they relate to our environment, they'll bring them to us. I'll give an example. We have launched a competition called Lekala Diakanyu. It's an application coding competition. We're going to fully grow it into a fully-fledged technology competition. It's a season of ideas, and in case my Tswana is bad, it's Lekala Diakanyu. I'm more paid inclined, so it's a season of ideas. That competition, though, is launched by CETA. We work together with the CPSI on it, and the awards are going to be, remember CPSI annually, they have innovation awards. The awards for the Lekala Diakanyu competition are going to be held, issued during the CPSI innovation. There are other areas where we require innovation, and they say it's not within our scope, we pass it over to them. There's a project that we are working together with them and the CSIR. Remember, it's not only CPSI, there's also CSIR. We are working together with those. We even have, because the CPSI is within the same portfolio or within the same family, at least our agreements are standardized. We even have a triple MOU with the CSIR, that is CETA, CPSI, and CSIR, to say how do we collaborate on innovation and innovative ideas and research and development as it proceeds. So there is that collaboration around that area. There is a question that was asked by an honorable member around, if you are, I think Mr. Mabena dealt with it, around the industry partners vis-a-vis dumping and the quality. I think it's the honorable chairperson. The standards will help us with that, but what I must indicate to members, yes, there is an issue of national interest or national security that are paramount. There are areas which we have defined within CETA to say these areas, because of their national security interest, we cannot partner with industry, we must do them in-house. There are certain applications that we must develop them ourselves, we must maintain them ourselves because they are of national interest. And how do we determine national interest? The State Security Agency classify them as systems of national interest. For instance, the National Population Register, because it has to deal with the identity of South Africans. We can't outsource that to industry. We must maintain it ourselves, because if you outsource that to industry, they may sell the identity of South Africans. So there is a process to make sure those that are of national security, we are covered. The other issues Mr. Mabena referred to around how we deal with their products in terms of their certification, their testing, and so forth, and also the security standards, because every product, I'll give you an example, mobile phones have encryptions. BlackBerry, the encryption goes back to Canada, where RIM is based. Nokia, it goes back to Europe, others, they go to Saudi Arabia, and so forth and so forth. But if you're going to get an encryption let's say we deploy the e-cabinet solution that we've been threatening to deploy for government, and ministers have to use their cell phones for that, we have, through the PKI, which the State Security Agency has developed, we have the ability to decrypt what the other company has done and overlay with our own encryption. That is, dilute the encryption and put our own encryption so that we don't have the WikiLeaks situation in our border. There's an issue that members also raised around IT skills knowledge for rural areas. CETA has a responsibility for government ICT. The ICT skills for rural areas is the responsibility for the Department of Communications and also the Department of Education. But we are collaborating with them on the development of ICT skills. On our part, on the development of ICT skills within the public service, we collaborate with BALAM. BALAMA does not have the training capacity or facility for IT skills. So when they have to train public servants or civil servants, they bring them to CETA to train. So it's not a CETA train. So CETA is a service provider on the ICT skills to BALAM, and those relationships are cleaned up. So you should not worry about the collaboration with BALAMA. It's fully effective. Even on the National ICT Skills Plan, we are participating in that to make sure that the draft happens completely. There was an issue around the connectivity of rural areas. as I've indicated to honourable members, CETA has a responsibility to connect government at wherever they are. If they're in a rural area, in whatever component of the country they are, we have a responsibility for that connectivity to make sure that they are connected. But the Department of Communications has a responsibility to make sure that South Africa as a whole is connected. It means they must make sure that we've got broadband connectivity across the country. If it was an ideal world and there was broadband connectivity across the country, CETA would not have to worry about connectivity, because then if a government, a department is sitting in Umtuvatuba or Eduja or Hashkunda Marema or whichever rural area that you can think of in South Africa, if DOC had completed what we call universal access, if there was universal access, CETA would then not have to worry about connectivity. Now we worry about connectivity because there is no universal access. And there is a drive through DOC to drive universal access. It's still a challenge, but we are working with them. But on our part, we are making sure that we drive connectivity of government institutions, either through satellite or through broadband connectivity, where we can take them and to share with other government institutions and government agencies and collaborate. But part of getting, I'll give you an example, part of getting government connectivity going, in the rural areas we talk about Tusong service centers. And we call, if we say all the Tusong service centers are connected, and it means citizens can go to the Tusong service centers and have a self-help or self-service ability. There will be a terminal, or they can go to a post office, because the post office has also done serious outreach in terms of connectivity. They go to the post office and they can connect. But how many of them are able to use that post office terminal? And also, how many of them are going to be able to use the computers as you've put in place? Our issue is that we should be able to make sure that at a basic level, a citizen, when they get there, there is somebody who assists them to get, with the basic things to use the skills. But key to that, we are also driving connectivity or enabling government through your cell phone. We are working, part of the innovation things that we are working on, we're saying if you're going to give government services online, everybody, even my grandmother, can use a cell phone. We must be able to have the government service through a cell phone, like in other countries they already have. So that's part of the innovation things. You asked Shepherdson to say, what innovation base are we looking at? We are looking at those things that will enable an improvement of accessing government services at ease.
Maybe before you pass that one, maybe the other way maybe we could have put it, you know, because I can hear that you are coming up with some aspects of what you are actually doing. We actually talk, I was linking it as well to the, you know, people's participation, where we don't see how much do we do. You are touching some of the aspects, but what might come from the side of the committee largely is also what you're talking about, the Tusong. But the Tusong in this instance where we are seated is that all the Tusong that the committee visited are not connected, which actually creates a disjuncture. And therefore, those are the centers that could be utilized for all the things that you're actually mentioning. And of course, it's part of what came up from the BRRR, where we're actually complaining, why do they talk about connecting the Tusong centers? It's very clear, based on the report that we had in the last weeks, that Tusong centers are definitely not connected. And therefore, maybe along this contribution with the CETA, there must be that thinking within the department to ensure that the Tusong are connected, because they're not. And those that we went to. Yes, of course, I always say, I don't want to listen to Maponya Mall anymore. I know it is, you know, every time they talk about it, we don't talk about particularly Maponya, thank you, we appreciate that delivery, but we talk rural largely. And therefore, that's why we're actually interested to find it happening.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I won't talk about Maponya Mall. I do not know which ones honorable members visited. There are two Tusong service centers that are working in Limpopo. Maybe it's because I've spent most of my time there. But the challenge that you see with the connectivity of Tusong service center, if you don't have full utilization, it becomes costly for DPSA to drive the connections. We have not completed the connections of all Tusong service centers. Maybe what we'll have to do as we go back from this question, we'll have to link up with DPSA to say those that members of the portfolio committee visited, are they part of those that we claim to have connected? And if it's part of those, we must check what are the issues. But in most areas where we say we have connected and the connection is not working, it's mainly when the telecom infrastructure goes down. Because for last mile, we depend on telecom. If the telecom infrastructure goes down and they are not replacing, it becomes an issue because you then have the connection, but it doesn't work because the routing line of telecom has gone down. And we've been working with telecom to try to resolve that. Maybe what I need to
okay, do maybe on that, let's allow you to just go to other questions. There is no dispute. The department knows we visited the two centers. They've got our report. You can get it from them. Those centers are not connected. In the last example, the last two centers that we visited was in Botshabelo. So we don't have a dispute. They know we went there. We found that they're not connected. All other reasoning and stuff, let's just leave it to, you know, maybe when we were calling them for the Tucson centers, we discussed this matter thoroughly. You know, fortunately in Limpopo, as we're saying, they might be connected, but unfortunately, the ones that you visited, there's no connectivity and they use home affairs is there and so on and so on. And therefore, it was just a bad situation. Let's just leave that one and not make an interaction because the department still owes us on that matter. I would like you to focus on issues of CETA. Maybe proceed on all other matters that are actually there. Let's not interact because I know members are very bitter about the Tucson centers. It might start to raise an uproar. I wouldn't like that situation. We can allow you to proceed with all other matters then.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think on the Tucson, we'll go back to the department because they will blame us if it's not done. So we must go back and sort it out with them to say,
yeah.
Yes, we'll sort it out and come back to the members, either in writing or we'll give the response to the department when they come through. On the issue that yourself, Honorable Chairperson, which you asked around, what is our contribution to job creation? We are working with industry to make sure that, like, for instance, the issue around the innovation, to say when we invest together or when they invest in projects that you say they must help us innovate, they must then do an uptake of graduates or trainees that they will mentor through and take them through. I'll give you an interesting example. When we engage with one of the OEMs, I will not mention the names because some of the processes are in procurement stage. They said they can take only 30 graduates. And we said, but 30 is your normal uptake. But if we said this is, you take 2 billion rands per annum from government on your own, that's not sufficient. Then they've raised the bar to 250. And we said, if we can raise it, it means we can push for more. But we've said to them, to industry, part of the responsibility that we have when we deal with innovation, we must check in your innovation programs, because they have innovation funds. In your innovation funds, how much are you contributing to unemployment in terms of creating jobs, but also how do we influence? Because what is critical for us is the influencing the uptake of those graduates. One company has a requirement that says they will only take you in your innovation program if you are from an elite university or elite technical and you are part of the top 25. And how many of our young people from disadvantaged areas can afford that? And we think that is not acceptable, and we started to engage, and they are now open to such things. So we are using innovation, but innovation even of industry, to drive job creation. We are working with DOC on agreeing. Remember, DOC committed targets for job creation from the ICT space. It would be a silo mentality for CETA to commit separate job creation targets, because DOC, they said overall, including the government spend, so that we are finalizing how our contribution in terms of those. I think those were all the questions that were asked, and unless I've left something out, members can add. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. Honorable Chair. A couple of points that I would like to emphasize, which have been alluded to by my colleagues. And it has to do with the whole value chain of providing services. Because when we looked at the value chain as part of the turnaround strategy, we singled out industry as a very important part of this value chain. And therefore, we felt that a direct interaction and a direct involvement of that part of the value chain will assist us in bringing down the cost of ICT or doing ICT business. And therefore, our involvement and intervention with them was very direct, in that we have held discussions with almost all of the OEMs in the country, without a doubt. And the message was very clear to them. And the message was, CISA is going to be doing business in a different way. Our business model has changed. Therefore, our mandate is we need to leverage on the economies of scale in terms of when you're doing business through CISA or through government. It will not matter anymore in the future. Secondly, we need to drive the cost down. Right? Immediately, we need to be able to start negotiating these multiple licenses that we have from organizations like, you know, Microsoft, IBM, etc. Those were issues that were put on the table. So once the process has run its full course, I am almost certain that we will be able to leverage on those discussions and be able to achieve the economies of scale that we were not able to do in the past. Secondly, when you were talking about research, Honorable Chair, and you were saying it's expensive, one of the things that we talked to when we talked to industry was that we would like them to come and co-invest in research in the country, so that it is not only the burden of CETA to invest in research, but it is the burden of CETA shared by industry. That is why the COO referred to the issue of risk sharing, where in certain projects which require a lot of money or a lot of investment, we call upon them to join us. Obviously, we select the project based on security, based on how sensitive they are for government, but we would like them to come and co-invest with us. And they've agreed in principle that they will co-invest with us. But also, we have said that a lot of them do their research outside of South Africa. Their test centers and everything else is based elsewhere other than in South Africa. And one of our mandate was, we would like to have test centers and research centers based in South Africa as well. So that it is not only happening elsewhere, because for us to be able to create jobs, it is also important for us to have those research, some of those research centers based in the country. And a number of the OEMs have indicated that, you know, they already have certain test centers and that they will increase the numbers. So the engagement with the OEMs or with industry was a very critical component in terms of the turnaround strategy, in that ultimately what it will yield will be economies of scale and bringing down the cost of doing ICT business. However, as part of that value chain, we also realize that our customers are an important part of the value chain, in that the CEO referred to the fact that we engaged with our customers before we started talking to industry. We had lengthy discussions with our biggest customers, who are the Defence Force, as well as SAPS, Department of Justice, Department of Home Affairs, so that we can be able to get understand their needs and translate their needs into our turnaround strategy, so that those needs can then be articulated appropriately to industry, which I believe we've done. We may not have, you know, done it sufficiently 100%, but I think it's work in progress, in that we intend, with our roadshows, with our engagement, as we go down the line with more and more customers, that will be able to articulate their needs even better. I think the third component of this value chain is our staff. We cannot deliver this. We can talk to industry, we can talk to our customers, but we cannot deliver this without our staff, which is now that part of the turnaround strategy where management and the executive are engaged with our staff on a formal basis, where there is a formal communication drive to let the staff know, one, regarding our turnaround, where we are; two, we need to reskill our staff; three, we need to renegotiate our psychological contract with them to make sure that they are up to the task. Because as an employer of choice, when we start being an integrator of choice on the ICT side for business, for government rather, you know, we need staff who are committed. We need staff who are very well skilled as well. So to that extent, there is a massive communication drive, but also a massive skills development drive to make sure that our own staff internally up to the task of us being able to perform at the level that we'll be expected to perform by government. So to a large extent, you know, those three components of the strategy are really being affected in that at the moment, the other two we've done, but the staff one, where the reskilling as well as the communication with the staff as to where we are with regard to the turnaround strategy is taking place right now and is being led by the executives. I just thought I should re-emphasize on those points, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, with regard to the issue around the connectivity, there is a project which is being led by the Deputy Ministers of DOC as well as the Deputy Minister of DPSA, where the school connectivity program is being used in order to drive rural connectivity, per se. Whether we're talking health with regard to the clinics, or whether we're talking schools, or we're talking police stations, or we're talking tourism centers, that project which is being led by the Deputy Ministers is meant to address that, because I think it was found that there's a deficiency in terms of the implementation of some of the issues around the tourism centers. So yes, I think there is a response towards that effect from the both the departments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Mr. Kame. My colleagues have really attempted, if there's any other question that you haven't attended to, members may really feel free to raise it again. Maybe in closing, a few more highlights is that developments at the systematic and therefore governance arrangement side of the life of CETA. The board, what it did is that we came in and saw that there were no adequate structures, even at the board level. And one of the first things that we did is to recommend to the minister the formation of adequate board committees, which as we speak now, we have a governance board committee. We have a stakeholder and ICT committee, an audit and risk committee, and an HR and remuneration committee, which in some instances, some of these functions were really bundled in the chairperson's office, which was really in direct conflict and violation of governance, as it were. So that situation was rectified. Further, I don't know how our executive really managed to pull this one, but at least in less than 6 months' time, this board has sat down to approve at least minimum of 30 policies and frameworks. And that should tell you the seriousness of the lack of governance processes and systems that were there and therefore leading to, you know, dysfunctionality and of the system as it were. So we have approved all of the systems, policies, frameworks now, which amongst others are policies that will ensure that we really deliver on our mandate and as well as contribute chairperson to the creation of jobs in areas where we do work. And I'm referring here to issues of SMME policy, skills development policy, ICT and security policies, because the absence of these meant that when there's an opportunity for tendering, we are unable to then have this set aside and ensure that the small SMMEs in rural areas, in provincial concerns, where our regional offices are, also that opportunities go to those small operators, those small companies, and therefore jobs are created, and the value stays in those local economies. That situation wasn't there, and this is a policy that is going to ensure that CETA begins to really potentially create these much desired jobs at local level as well. The other thing that I wanted to say, Chairperson, in closing, is that the creation of jobs in rural areas, one can also argue, when you talk automation, it's almost self-contradictory. Automation has really impacted badly on job creation right across the economy. Now, whilst it has the potential to create jobs, but at the same time it takes away the very jobs that are there because, you know, machines replaces people. To a great extent, we are seeing job creation, but, you know, to a very minimalistic extent, as it were. This is why we need to make sure that, you know, we devise all other innovations to also contribute towards this effort. In the last statement that the then Minister of Communications and the now newly appointed Minister of Public Service, Honorable Roy Parayaki, in announcing that the ICT sector in general is going to create the potential of about 1 million jobs over, Mr. Tami, I don't know what process, over 10, 15 years or so. Most of those job opportunities will come directly from the potential of projects that are managed and facilitated by CETA. As the volume of work of procurement for on behalf of departments is happening through CETA. And I'm saying this because we are beginning to experience a lot of migration back by those departments that we, you know, opted out of the process of CETA, and therefore we experienced that exodus in a couple of years that has passed. So as a result of that migration back, and the fact that we now have improved the system, we now are gaining the confidence of the user fraternity of departments out there, that the job creation that we envision will only become a reality when we do so. With that, I would like to thank you, Honorable Chair, and maybe await your further instruction.
Okay, I really think that we should not proceed with discussions. We might end up now setting some other debates that don't necessarily fall here. But we want to just appreciate the significant progress that we actually get from the side of the CETA. That's what we're actually looking for. And we are aware that your plans are in order to ensure that you implement totally your turnaround strategy. Definitely. I want to believe that you'll get the necessary support from the department, also with the minister who is there. We really appreciate all the information you brought before us. We think as the committee now we have a change of mind in terms of the past that had been very painful with our interaction with CETA. We want to give support to all of those who are new, who are doing the hard work, and those who are old, of course, who are complementing the process positively and making sure that we do get a positive outcome, because that's largely what we are looking forward to. I just need to indicate that in relation to our program, item number two, we have an update on the draft legislation to be tabled in Parliament during 2011-2012 financial year. Of course, this legislation still has some time because the financial year only ends in March, in April, and therefore the commitment should be within that time period. What we're expecting to get from the department today is where are we in relation to those who don't want in April to hear that we haven't done so this. We are still doing this. We want to start as early as now. And I must indicate that we had been deprived as the committee an opportunity to actually start to understand and hear how far the process goes. I think it is an unfortunate situation. Also in the light that there was none attendance by the any official of the department. I think it's a serious matter in the light that there was a Kenny Govender, I know that is not the one who's acting at the moment, who called me yesterday in the light of the discussion and telephonic discussion, and also in the light of a telephonic discussion with the Deputy Minister this morning. We therefore do not take this kind. We think a non-response, because we really requested Martinez to call. Non-response from the department when everyone has closed the phone, while only Pretoria indicates others have come for this presentation. It's completely unacceptable. We're definitely not going to take it kind as this committee. If we leave things like this, we won't be able to work moving forward. And therefore, I think this matter is very serious. I would like to take up this matter with the new minister to discuss it. But also, I think it's a matter that needs the attention of Parliament because as a committee, we have presented things that we'll be dealing with as the government of Parliament, with a government on our oversight. We are not going to have anything to report on the draft legislation, but it was presented. It was on the ATC. It's a serious thing, actually. It's not just a friendship or talk thing. And therefore, if this happens, how do we account as a committee? Before we are asked to account, maybe people must account why they couldn't come, and also why do we get this kind of disrespect, you know, because we're merely doing the task that is assigned before us, and therefore this matter should be accordingly taken up. We will talk to the chair of chairs why we submitted something that could not happen. It's completely out of what we could do. We've tried our best to even follow up people when we were seated and they were not part of the meeting. That's very strange, frankly, and that's completely disrespectful. And therefore, we will have to deal with that matter along that way. Thank you very much, Sita, for this feedback. At least we have worked on something and we have got good feedback. We wish you all the best in terms of taking on the State Information Technology Agency. You have removed our worries as the committee, and we think you're doing good work. We'd like to encourage you to do more, and we hope that you will still have some interaction and engagement, largely on areas that we've just mentioned. Some of the matters might come in forms of some questions, but we really want to thank you very much for the good work and encourage you to actually continue to do that kind of work. Honourable members, if you allow me, I think we can adjourn the meeting now. Okay, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.